This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, my career took off as soon as Paul walked through the door. I think he doesn't get the recognition he deserves around the league. I felt that way for a long time. You know, the fact that he wasn't, up for the Coach of the Year last year, I thought was a real shame. But I don't think those things really matter to him. I think coaching our team, getting the most out of us every single day is what gets him out of bed, but it's great for him to get a little recognition at an event like this.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler. That was from Thursday afternoon at the NHL All-Star Game Media Day, singing the praises of Jets head coach Paul Maurice. We sit here on Saturday, the 26th of January. The Jets, the NHL, in the midst of the All-Star Game, All-Star Break. The Jets back in action, of course, on Monday in Philadelphia. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. And given that it's the All-Star Break, we have a special show for you. In the third hour, we don't do it very often, but in the third hour, starting at 11:15, we're going to open up the phone lines. We want to get your opinion on the Winnipeg Jets, on the topics, the burning topics for the Jets as we approach the final 34 games of the regular season. So get ready for that coming up in the third hour. Without further ado, I say good morning to Ezra and to David. Gentlemen, it's good to see you on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, nice to see you guys. Let's break down that skills competition, Drew.
You're going to have to do that one on your own. I admit that I watched a little bit of it, and then I turned it off and went on my merry way on yesterday evening.
Well, boys, can we all agree that the best part of the skills competition, maybe with the exception of Austin Matthews taking off his jersey and revealing that he was wearing the Marlowe jersey, was Kendall Coyne? I mean,
well, first of all, let me just stop you. Matthews should have been wearing a Sharks Marlowe jersey. That would have been better. Because, I mean, if you're trying to endear yourself to the San Jose Sharks,
I don't think you can be repping the other team's brand, though.
It's the All-Star game. Who cares?
You know what the funniest thing is? That other network was playing last year's skills competition, and a lot of people were tweeting out, why is Connor Hellebuck at the All-Star game?
Why were they playing last year's skills competition?
Like they were showing highlights?
Because it started late, right?
Oh, so like they were doing it to bridge the gap until...
Right, they played the 2018 All-Star Game from
until
Tampa.
Leading into the 2019 All-Star Game?
Right, so a lot of people were watching The Fastest Skater, and they're saying, like, why is Noah Hanifin in a Carolina jersey?
That's hilarious.
That is funny.
You'd think that they'd do it with like an overlay or something.
Something saying that. It reminds me of my grandfather when he used to watch golf sometimes, and it would be like a rain-delayed version of golf, so he'd be talking about how great Tiger is playing, and we'd have to tell him that that's from 3 years ago.
Actually, what Drew would say is, hey, Grandpa, you want to make a bet?
He was too smart for that. The Kendall Coyne part last night, Ezzy, I mean, it was great to see, women's hockey in the spotlight, but I found it a little odd that people were so surprised that an elite athlete was elite.
Well, I don't think that's what it's about. I think it's more than just the first woman participating in the All-Star Skills Competition. I think it's about promoting women's hockey, as you said. It's not necessarily about whether or not she was going to win.
No.
It's just fantastic for women's hockey, I think, to get the spotlight. And kudos to Nathan MacKinnon. I tweeted this out. I mean, it was Nathan MacKinnon's idea, right? Because he was supposed to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tweeted at Kendall Coyne, who was going to be one of the demonstrators. If you didn't watch it, they had some women's hockey players from Team USA and Team Canada helping demonstrate the events last night. So I just thought it was a really nice touch, and she can fly.
Yeah, but I mean, she's a great athlete.
I mean, if you're surprised, then obviously you haven't watched women's hockey before, but I thought that the point was just that it was a great showcase for women's hockey.
Yeah, no argument with that, but all the people who are expressing shock at how great she was, I thought that was a little bit odd. I'm like, she's an Olympian. She should be great, and she is great, and she demonstrated that on the national scene, which is, I guess, what the important part of that whole thing was. I didn't watch much of it aside from the Kendall Coyne clip and a little bit of that puck relay where Scheifele was doing well, and then he had that miss there at the end, and it cost him, a good spot on the podium or whatever you want to say. The All-Star Skills Competition is fun. I think it goes on a little too long, but it was fun nonetheless, I guess.
I was watching the Moose game.
You're watching the Moose game.
NHL Live.
Moose dropped a shootout decision in Rockford last night.
A game they're probably not going to be very happy with. Rockford and Manitoba are tied. We're tied in points, but Moose have three games in hand on them. And they had a comfortable 3-1 lead, and Rockford made it a 3-2 game. And then they said it was only 1 second left on the clock, but I think there was a few more seconds. But with the goalie pulled, they tied the game up. Overtime was incredibly exciting. Sami Niku was flying all over the place, had a couple of chances to end it, and instead went to a shootout where Rockford won 2-0.
The Moose will be back in action this afternoon.
Yeah,
a game
quick
you
turnaround.
Where in Rockford again?
No, Milwaukee.
So they have to travel last night from Rockford to Milwaukee. Not a long
an hour.
An hour. But the Moose game, again, you can hear that live this afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290.
And next week, Logan Shaw is going to be able to showcase his skills in the AHL All-Star Game.
There you go. Where is the AHL All-Star Game this year,
Dave? Springfield, Massachusetts.
Thank you.
And it's coming up, though. I think it's like
Monday or Tuesday or something?
Yeah, it's Monday, I think.
Yeah, it's always in midweek right after NHL game.
They play today, and then tomorrow is kind of like a day off like for guys to get there.
Travel day.
I think there's actually events tomorrow night, though.
Oh.
But again, I don't really care about the AHL All-Star Game, and I'm going to be an equal opportunist, don't care about either.
There you go. That's you're nothing if not fair. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets. As we mentioned, the bye week is coming to an end, obviously, with the All-Star break. It's been a long week without any Jets hockey to really bide our time. 34 games to go in the regular season for the Winnipeg Jets. What are the expectations? What are the goals in the next 34 games? What is the team focusing on, do you think, they're clearly going to be a playoff team. They're barring some sort of huge collapse, they're going to be either in the first or in second spot in the Central Division. So what's the priority for the Jets over the next 34 games?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned we know the Jets are going to be a top two team in the Central. That's no surprise based on what these teams did last year, right, boys? But I think you're expecting this team to, I think, fine-tune some of the elements in their game. And, you know, we've talked about Patrick Laine a lot. We've talked about the power play a lot. You know, these two things are in a bit of a slump right now, Patrick Laine and the power play, and they go hand in hand because Laine is the most dangerous player on the Jets' power play. But I think you're looking for overall improvements in the Jets' game. And they've been pretty consistent here, I would say, you know, the last 10 to 15 games of the season. October to mid-November, I think you were still seeing some warts in their game, and you're expecting the Jets to get healthier. Dustin Byfuglien will come back first, and then Nikolai Ehlers. Also, we should mention Ben Sherratt's going to be back in the lineup most likely Monday against Philadelphia. But I think, Drew, you're looking for small overall improvements in the Jets game, because overall, we know this team can score goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think at times they've let teams get back into games, and there have been games that I think have been too close for your liking. But I think overall, you know, the Jets have to be happy with the fact that they're in first place. And I find that very interesting, guys, that this year, you know, the Jets are in first place and have been in first place for the majority of the season, as opposed to last year where they were chasing Nashville. And this year you could argue that the Jets haven't played as well as last year. And, you know, that starts with the goaltending, not Lauren Brossoit, but specifically Connor Hellebuck. And I'm not trying to call Hellebuck out right now, but I think anybody who's watched this team the last couple of years would agree that Hellebuck was better last year. Not saying that he hasn't been good this year, but he was a more dominant goalie. So I think when you're looking at this team and maybe also the production of that second line, whoever that second line is, Dave, because obviously Brian Little and Patrick Laine have been a staple of that second line, and it's been either Ehlers or Connor. I'm going to be really interested to see what happens after Ehlers comes back, Dave, because Paul Maurice likes Laine on the left side now. Laine has been playing on the left side as of late, so I'm going to be really interested to see if Ehlers plays the right side on the second line, because I really don't think you want Kyle Connor on the right side because he's been so good on the left side.
Mm-hmm. No, it'll be very interesting, and that's kind of a luxury that you have. And we talked about it on last week's show, is that this depth is allowing you to know that you've still got a pretty good team, even when you're missing big pieces like Dustin Byfuglien and Nikolai Ehlers. But of course, when those guys come back, there's no question that they're getting back into the lineup whenever they're healthy and ready to go. It also gives you the luxury of not needing to rush them. Right, when you're in a position where you're in first comfortably, you know, mm-hmm. You're ahead of Nashville and in Minnesota.
Points up on Minnesota, have a couple games in hand on them.
Yeah, they've got two games in hand on Minnesota. So from the Jets' perspective, this is all coming out in their favor in that regard, because you want to have a team that's healthy and rested. You also want to have a team that has had its depth tested. And I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit, how the Jets need to become a little more reliant on that fourth line. Give them more minutes, give them more opportunity, allow them to kind of handle some you know, different situations that they've been seeing as opposed to what was the previous norm, which was very limited minutes, limited opportunity, because you're not going to give them that opportunity for the first time in the playoffs.
Right.
So you may as well do it in the regular season when, you know, you've already established yourself as a big dog in the Western Conference. So to me, the lineup will be mixed and matched. I mean, obviously, there's some tweaking to go on. It's also it's very hard to future cast lineups based on the fact that there's an expectation, of course, at the end of February that the Jets will have at least probably one more, maybe one more defenseman or another forward or both.
I mean, I think you're almost in a bit of a holding pattern for the next month until that trade deadline because you don't really know what your playoff roster is likely going to look like. Mm-hmm. Again, assuming, and by all indications, the expectation is the Jets are going to add some pieces to their roster. Now, whether or not those are strictly depth pieces or these are actually players who are going to make, you know, be regulars in the lineup, you know, you almost have this month where you're just treading water until you figure out who's going to be your actual playoff roster, quote unquote, with who you add around the trade deadline.
Right. And, you know, we talk about fine-tuning and tweaking, and you mentioned the last month. And if you look at the last month, I mean, with the exception of I would say, a couple of games, you really like how the Jets played. The Jets went 6-3. The game against Pittsburgh on that Friday night to begin the month, that was a game that you'd like to have back. And then the game against Dallas, the most recent one, where the Jets really didn't show up till the third period. But when you're coming off of wins, guys, against Nashville and Vegas, and not just wins, commanding wins, I think you're allowed to lose one game. When you've played six games in nine nights, I think you're allowed to lose one out of every five games. So when you're talking about, you know, this Jets team and what they need to get better at, they've got four games in hand on Nashville for first place.
Yeah.
So I think you're nitpicking if you're looking at major issues with the Jets right now. Can some players be better? Of course. You could look at all 31 teams in the league and you could say, you know, that certain players need to be better. I mean, look at the Edmonton Oilers. Well, you could probably pick out 15 guys that need to be playing better.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's you know an exceptional case.
I don't mean to pick on the Oilers, but I mean you could pick Colorado. Colorado's been slumping.
Yeah, Colorado's been bad.
Minnesota hasn't exactly been tearing it up.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why Nino Niederreiter got traded, right? They wanted to shake up the roster. Yeah. So you could look at teams even in the Jets division that need to be better.
There's no question about that. I mean, the thing that the Jets have had going for them all season long is the consistent results they've been getting. Have they gone three games without earning a point? I don't think they have. I think their longest losing streak without earning 1 point has been two games all season long. Mm-hmm. Their longest winning streak has only been four wins.
Yeah.
But when
worst stretch was losing to Minnesota, losing to Calgary, and then losing to Pittsburgh. They lost three of four.
Okay. I mean, but
they haven't lost three in a row.
Right. You haven't lost three in a row without earning points. I mean, that's how you succeed in this day and age in the NHL, even without a winning streak of seven or eight or nine games. It's getting points on a consistent basis, and that's why they currently, you know, are atop the Central Division, and they have four games in hand on Nashville, which is an amazing number of games.
Yeah, and I think part of it was that people weren't seeing the Jets play like Winnipeg Jets hockey to the degree that they kind of got used to at the end of last season. And, you know, this is a team that has oodles of talent, but it wasn't necessarily, again, just ripping it up. And I think to Ezzie's point, when you see the way they played against Vegas and when you see the way they played against Nashville, those were more the games that people are looking to see from the Winnipeg Jets.
Because that was the games towards the end of the season last year, those are the games you saw.
That's right. And those are important kind of statement games. And I know it's, you know, of course, it's only January, so it's a little bit hard to be saying it's already a statement game. But there was some focus on those games. So, you know, they came out of it in a good place. And, of course, you know, like I said, I think now, though, while the season kind of was and the Jets would never admit this. In fact, Blake Wheeler like bristles at the very mention that the team is kind of going through. He's been asked
pacing themselves,
and kind of going through the motions of the season, knowing that this is a playoff team and a playoff roster, and you can see that he doesn't appreciate that tact of thinking, but the reality is that I think everybody would admit this, that as you get closer to that trade deadline, as you can kind of sense that change in the game and the change in momentum, change of importance, and I think from that perspective, teams are going to start to ratchet up their efforts, and we're going to see a little more of a you know, the Jets holding to that Winnipeg Jets style of hockey.
I would agree with that. When we return, we're going to talk about the Jets' top six defense. Dustin Byfuglien is on the verge of being healthy. What should the Jets' defense be when Byfuglien is back and healthy? We'll talk about the forward group as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Play in the defensive zone. Sammy Niku had a sequence of defensive plays where he had body position. He was smothering that offensive burst from Nashville. He pops the puck back in the defensive zone right here. Look, body position stays with him, and he has an active stick. Not once, but twice he pops it. That leads to the offensive zone time, and he's going to get the second assist on this play as he really quarterbacks this 5-on-5 push.
Jets analyst Kevin Sawyer breaking down the play of Sammy Niku. That was from the Jets' victory over the Predators two Thursdays ago. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I think Les would like that I'm eating an apple right now.
I'm just glad you're not actually chewing the apple while we're on air, so that was well-timed on your part.
I am.
Also a little surprised. I mean, but you can't hear you gnawing on the apple like a horse or something. I'm a little surprised you're eating an apple, to be perfectly honest.
Nature's toothbrush.
I don't know about that.
It's true.
Is it?
Yeah, they say they're very good for your teeth.
Okay. But I'm a little surprised that you're eating an apple on air. But this does lead us into talking about next week's show, which is going to be our 10th anniversary show of being on air here in Winnipeg, and we'll be able to play the clip of when you bought an apple at a local convenience store, and it was a rotten apple.
Yep.
So that's an exciting thing that we can look forward to on next Saturday's show as we celebrate 10 years of Illegal Curve Radio.
I don't think we're going to be eating apples, though. We're going to be eating something a little sweeter. I'm going to pick up a big cake.
Really?
Then I'm actually going to jump out of it.
Yeah, it's a surprise, and that'll be how the show just self-destructs at that point in time. Let's talk about the Jets' defense. Dustin Byfuglien is set to return to the lineup sometime soon. That was sort of the timeline, was after the All-Star break, there'd be another update, and the expectation is that it'll be sooner rather than later.
I think the home game against Columbus makes the most sense.
Yeah, I could see them leaving him. You know, it's funny, though, because when I was at the arena, I saw him kind of doing some workout with the training staff, and it was interesting. I mean, he was looking good, and so you know, from that perspective, I thought it was a little bit sooner than you'd maybe expect to see him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's a function of they've learned that they don't need to rush.
That's right.
And again, you want Dustin Byfuglien to be healthy at 100% in April, not worrying about whether you've rushed him to get back for February. So I agree with Ezzy. Like, I don't care if he says I'm 90% of the way ready to go, coach.
Yeah.
You say, well, I want you to be 100. So you're going to miss those two games in Philadelphia and Boston.
Yeah, Dave, I think it makes the most sense that you see Ben Chiarot back against Philly and Boston. And then, as we mentioned, I don't think you throw Buff into a back-to-back situation on the road when he hasn't been, you know, competing full contact. So the game against Thursday against Columbus makes the most sense at home. And the good news is Buff is coming back. And we've talked about the power play. The power play has been struggling without Buff. The Jets haven't been struggling, but it's just going to be nice to have the big man back.
Certainly will be a nice addition to the Jets defense when it does happen. The question for you guys is, what should the Jets' top six defense be when Byfuglien returns? Has Sammy Niku done enough to warrant a full-time position on the Jets' blue line when Byfuglien is back and healthy and when Ben Chiarot is back and healthy? The right side is pretty self-evident. It's pretty clear, you know, Byfuglien, Myers, Trouba, no particular order. What about the left side? How does that shake out? What is the ideal left side defense for the Jets when Byfuglien returns to the lineup and when Ben Chiarot returns to the lineup?
Right, and first of all, this segment is brought to you by the Free Sammy Niku movement. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the way Niku has played, and he's obviously playing for the Moose now. He played last night for the Moose, and he's played, I think, what, three games now, Dave, since he was recalled?
Two games.
Reassigned. So he's played two games.
Oh, no, you're right, three. Sorry, three. He played the last one at home.
Right, and, you know, you could see the improvement in Niku's game at the NHL level, right? Because he only played that one game last year in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I was at that game, no big deal.
And it is no big deal.
You've seen that, you know, his ice time has gone up. You know, he was playing a little bit less, and I think he peaked at 14 minutes and 55 seconds, I think, in that Anaheim game, if I'm not mistaken, was the game in which he played the most. But I don't think the question, Drew, is necessarily, is Niku ready to play a top six role in the NHL. It's, can Nyku play a top six role on this team, right? And you've got Ben Chiarot ahead of him on the depth chart. And I've said this many times before. I would argue that this has maybe been Chiarot's best year with the Jets. And obviously, if you're looking at it from a pure skill level, guys, I mean, let's be honest. Nyku can fly. I mean, Nyku is such a beautiful skater. He can move the puck. He can distribute the puck. He's got an underrated shot. I mean, Dave's seen that a lot at the American Hockey League level, more so at the NHL level. That's partly due to the fact Niku's not going out there on the power play for the Jets. That'll come in time. But
yeah, he's just getting 5-on-5 time for the
exactly.
most part.
Exactly. And the future is very bright for Nyku. And we're going to be talking about Sammy Nyku a lot over the coming years. Great story. Seventh round pick back in 2015. You know, he wins the Rookie of the Year in the American Hockey League. I mean, Nyku is a great story, but the point is, on this Jets team, if they're healthy, if Buff is back, if Chiarot is back, I just don't see there being a fit for Nyku, because then what are you going to do? Are you going to carry Chiarot as your seventh defenseman? That's kind of Joe Morrow's role right now. I guess you could have Morrow and Chiarot as number seven and number eight as your healthy scratches, but the way I look at it, you probably want Sammy Nyku playing top minutes in the American Hockey League. Now, that doesn't mean that Niku's not going to play again for the Jets this year. Maybe he even gets into some playoff games. But as it stands right now, I think when Chiarot comes back, I mean, he goes right back to that second pair with Dustin Byfuglien. That's the way I look at it. And that doesn't mean that, you know, Nyku isn't a great defenseman. And it doesn't even mean that Nyku's not better than Chiarot, because I think Nyku is more skilled than Chiarot. But I think right now they love Chiarot in kind of that shutdown role.
I think, as he hit it on the head, it's what they love. And I think Coach Maurice has shown that he has a love affair with Ben Chiarot, and he likes him in that pairing with Dustin Byfuglien. I think Byfuglien carries Chiarot, to be honest with you,
yep.
when I'm watching that for the most part. And I think that the problem for Sammy Nyku is he prefers to play on the right side. And
right.
And he said that. He plays the right side generally in the American Hockey League. He's, on the four games I think he played recently with the Jets, he was on the right side of his pairing. So that's would be, to me, is Sammy Niku's biggest issue is on the Jets with Morrissey, Myers, and Byfuglien ahead of you.
Trouba, Myers.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Trouba, Byfuglien, and Myers ahead of you. Where are you going to move on that right side? Now,
right.
Of course, the goal would be, and you know, everybody's vision is Sammy Nyku on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien filling that Tobias Enstrom role that we, you know, that we got used to seeing for so many years here in Winnipeg. So to me, and it's not that Sammy hasn't played left side, but again, it's a player's preference, and he prefers to play on that right side. And again, traditionally, we've seen him on the right side. I said left, but I meant on the right side. So it's a function of developing what Josh Morrissey did, which is being a right side guy, but moving over to that left side and being able to adjust. So I think if Sammy Nyku can adjust, then I think it's something that you're going to see. Now, having said that, I don't think that you're going to want to go into the playoffs with Sammy Nyku as your
Sammy Nyku and Joe Morrow would be your healthy scratch defenseman.
Right. That would be I say that as someone who anticipates the Jets making a move. So I think if the Jets, let's use Jake Muzzin because he seems to be the guy that everybody's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Kings are loving the fact that everybody's talking about that because I think it's driving up the price. I think you got Toronto probably interested. I think that the Jets may be interested. But I mean, the problem for me and the question is thinking long term is, would you want to have a guy like Muzzin in the lineup right now who would fit in probably pretty well with Dustin Byfuglien in that second pairing?
Mm-hmm.
And then allow you to have Myers and Kulikov as that third pairing. And then you have Chiarot, Morrow as your 7-8.
Right.
Is Kulikov, is he ahead of Chiarot and Nyku on the depth chart? On your depth chart?
I would say Chiarot is probably ahead of him. I mean, Kulikov, to me, the thing that bothers me a little bit about Kulikov his game at times is that he goes for a hit. And he goes for a little bit of skate, and he puts himself out of position. Now, I think Kulikov can be a very reliable defenseman, but I think it all comes down to pairs. I mean, we know that Maurice loves to have Scheifele and Wheeler together.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he loves to have Lowry and Tanev together. It's no different. I mean, Morrissey and Trouba, that's written in stone. Chiarot and Byfuglien, I think that's written in stone. I mean, when the Jets are at their peak, I think when they're playing their best, those are their top four defensemen. Now, you could argue that, you know, Ben Chiarot isn't, you know, a legitimate top four defenseman. Fine. If you want to argue that, that's fine. But when you're playing with Dustin Byfuglien, as Dave mentions, Buff brings out the best in Ben Chiarot. Ben Chiarot, even though he can dangle, and we've seen him rip that slap shot from the point, he's more of a defensive kind of old school,
he's a physical
stay-at-home defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. And that complements Dustin Byfuglien, who's more of that kind of modern-day rover defenseman, right? He's a guy that likes to get up into the play, and we see him use that big body and wrap shots around and all that. And so I think as it stands right now, it gets back to Josh Morrissey played a full year in the American Hockey League. He played part of a year with the St. John's Ice Caps, but before he was a regular defenseman, he played a full year in the NHL. AHL. Morrissey's a first-round pick, though. Morrissey's an excellent defenseman. Sammy Niku is now in his second full American Hockey League season. You have to be patient. He's only 22 years old. Not everybody is Rasmus Dahlin, right, that steps into the NHL at 18 years old and...
Aaron Ekblad.
Exactly. Yeah. Aaron Ekblad and Rasmus Dahlin are
the first overall exceptions.
They're first overall picks, first-round picks. So, I mean, Sammy Niku has a bright future. He might be a regular top-six defenseman with the Jets as early as next year. I just think right now, when you're Paul Maurice and you have players like Dmitry Kulikov and you have Ben Chiarot and Tyler Myers, veteran defensemen to pick from... there's not necessarily a place in the top six for Sammy Niku. And again, I'm not trying to be negative or anything like that. I think the world of Niku. I really do. I mean, and kudos to the Jets amateur scouting staff for finding this guy in the seventh round. But I think you just have to realize that, you know, the Jets have a pretty darn good group of defensemen right now, and it's going to be tough for him to crack the lineup.
And I think from to Ezzie's point,
when the Jets are healthy,
yeah, no, and that's the whole point. I think if you're healthy and if the Jets, let's go on the presumption the Jets make a trade for a defenseman that pushes Ben Chiarot and Joe Morrow down. So if you're the Jets and you have a healthy top 60 and you got those guys at 7 and 8, you want Sammy Niku playing in the American Hockey League and developing. And I agree with Ezzie. It's the same thing with Josh Morrissey. You know, people sometimes lose focus on the fact that we've talked. What did you talk about? He's playing 5-on-5 and he's playing limited minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, in the AHL, he was playing huge minutes last night for the Manitoba Moose. He's playing overtime. He's getting opportunity. And again, there's things he can work on because there's things he needs to work on. Again, offensively, he is absolutely gifted. Defensively, he's pretty gifted, but his speed allows him to make adjustments for any mistakes he makes. But at the same time, there's still things that he needs to work on his game that you don't want a player learning at the NHL level because it's not a forgiving league, right? Whereas in the AHL, again, Coach Vincent, if he sees a player make a mistake, he's not saying you're benched for the rest of the game. He's throwing that player back out there as a teachable moment. And so what I'm saying is that you don't have those same types in the NHL that you do in the AHL. You don't have that luxury where the coaching staff will make those sort of adjustments for you. So to me, I say for the long-term development of a player like Sammy Niku, who you want in the organization for the next 5 to 10 years, you leave him in the AHL, let him develop there, and then you have other guys like Chiarot, Morrow be your 6 or 7 defensemen.
When the Jets are healthy, we will have an answer to that question, but for now, time will tell. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us. We'll talk more about the Winnipeg Jets at the NHL All-Star Break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And remember, in hour number three, starting at 11:15 this morning, we're going to take your calls. That'll be at 780-1290, so get ready for that in hour number three.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's a good friend of this program. Jason Bell joins us. Jason, good morning. How are you enjoying the All-Star break and the bye week?
Yeah, it's been a good week. I've been able to do a couple of different things, non-Jets related. Back at it today, though. Fly to Philadelphia later this afternoon, and the fellows I are going to probably muster there at some point tomorrow in Philadelphia. Have a practice there. We'll be able to have an opportunity to speak with them before Monday night's game. So it's right back at it.
Yeah, straight from the frying pan into the fire for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Jason, we were talking about it in the first segment of the show. You got sort of 34 games to go in the regular season, but from our perspective, the next month is sort of an interesting, almost holding pattern for the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, they want to maintain the quality play that they've had as of late, but you know, in the next month, it'll determine what their actual roster is come playoff time. So from the players' perspective, it's sort of, you know, they want to maintain the consistency, but I don't think they're necessarily ready to hit that elite stride until after the trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this actually in the office, that, you know, what do we do as a newspaper in our coverage team to kind of, you know, handle these next few weeks. I mean, it's going to be there's not going to be a tremendous amount of jockeying for position overall in the division for the Winnipeg Jets, other than, you know, are they going to finish first or second in the Central Division? Unless, of course, there's this colossal collapse, which I don't think any of us really anticipate. So, you know, what's next? Well, you're right. I mean, it's a situation where they want to continue to develop, as they say. They want to manage their day, as Paul Maurice always says. And I think that just means getting better. I don't read a lot into what they did in their last outing against Dallas. I was a little perplexed as to why they'd come out so flat. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, they talk about being a tired hockey club, and they talk about playing a lot of hockey, and I get all that. But to me, they checked out just a little bit too early for my liking, and were ready for the break a little early. And they were impressed with the way they came back in that game, and certainly there was a good push from the club. But, you know, they're going to have to sort of come back from the break with sort of a renewed sense of urgency, as it is, because they do want to continue to develop as a good hockey club. They want to make sure they get their guys back. They're getting Dustin Byfuglien and Nick Ehlers back, you know, the next couple of weeks. In fact, we may even see Dustin Byfuglien in Philadelphia or Boston this week. And then it's a matter of really, you know, the players doing what they're doing on the ice, but also Kevin Cheveleyoff, as you suggested, has a big job ahead of him and his pro scouts to figure out exactly what they want to do with this hockey club. Are they going to add a big piece to the puzzle like they did with the Paul Stastny? Or are they going to, you know, kind of just maybe tinker with some fringe pieces? Are they going to maybe bolster a fourth line? Or are they going to add another defenseman? You know, I've liked the way Ben Chiarot has played, but perhaps there's an upgrade on that side. So it'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, this is a real good hockey club. I mean, they're one of the very premier teams in their conference, and we anticipate a road to the Stanley Cup not unlike last year, where, you know, they may be playing a wild team in the first round. They may have to go up against the Nashville Predators team in the second round, and, you know, it might be a lot of, you know, been there, done that for this team.
You know, Jason, you mentioned Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien in your answer, and of course Buff has been out since end of December with that injury, and Ben Chiarot has missed the last three games for the Jets. Is the expectation that Chiarot's going to be healthy for the back-to-back games against Philly and Boston, and then maybe Buff returns Thursday at home against Columbus?
It'll be interesting to see. We were led to believe in Dallas as that, you know, if you know, there was a great necessity for Ben Chiarot to have played in Dallas, he would have. But of course, you know, Joe Morrow and Sammy Niku had played pretty darn well in Nashville, obviously, and there was no great push to rush Ben Chiarot back into the lineup. We saw him a lot. He was very visible around, you know, there was the dads and the family trip, as you can appreciate, and he was around, and, you know, we had a couple of chats with him off the ice, and, you know, there's no visible signs of him struggling with any health issues, but obviously there's something niggling injury in his lower body that kept him off the ice. But we think he's good, probably going to be good to go in Philadelphia. And then there, you know, Paul Maurice had hinted that, you know, Dustin Byfuglien was maybe a week away, and that was back in whatever day that was. That's a week today. Now, does that mean they push him into the lineup in Philadelphia or Boston? You know, probably not, because, again, the way that Joe Morrow and Sammy Niku had played, and especially if you get a Ben Chiarot back, I anticipate that Dustin Byfuglien will definitely be here playing against Columbus, if not before that. Nick Ehlers is probably another week to 10 days behind him. Again, according to what Coach had told us in Dallas.
Well, Jake, Coach Maurice has shown a propensity for riding his goaltenders quite a lot. Of course, everybody thinks to Artur Zerbe in the 76 games he played one season. But, you know, Connor Hellebuyck, and we talked about this actually on last week's show, on how goaltenders who have won the Stanley Cup the last few years have only played between 50, 57 games. Connor Hellebuyck obviously wants to play, you know, a lot of games. But has the play of Laurent Brossoit, and Mike, your colleague Mike McIntyre, wrote a really interesting article in the Winnipeg Free Press about Laurent Brossoit and his resurgence with the Jets. He really forced the coach almost to allow Connor Hellebuyck to have a little more rest in between games based on how he's played?
Yeah, and, you know, I find it interesting the way that the goaltenders are handled with this organization, and because Connor, they have so much trust in Connor Hellebuck's ability to really know his own body and know his own, you know, what he can handle and what he can't. I really often think that it's not so much the coach pointing to Connor Hellebuyck and saying, 37, you're in tonight. It's sort of the other way around where, you know, you come see me if you want to play tonight. I mean, probably not quite that loosely, but there's certainly a give-and-take relationship there. But maybe some of that control that Connor Hellebuyck has with his own work club maybe has to go back to the bosses in that maybe they need to say, you know, we watched what you did last year, and you were terrific, obviously, a Vezina-caliber season through the regular season. But I think there was certainly a fatigue factor towards the end. I mean, I think there was a grind in that Nashville series, and I think to a man, they were probably feeling it against Vegas, and Connor Hellebuyck would not have escaped that. So, you know, I think they're going to be very, very careful with the way that the kind of workload that they give Connor Hellebuyck, and of course they did not have, you know, certainly they wouldn't have told us outwardly, but they would not have had the confidence in their backup situation last year that they do with Laurent Brossoit. I mean, you know, 10-1-1, and the numbers are staggering, right, for a backup goaltender and the resurgence of this kid. So I'm not suggesting that Laurent Brossoit is all of a sudden going to be a 50-50 split down the stretch, because that's not going to happen. But there will certainly be, it'll certainly be an easier decision to put in Brossoit. And I don't know what the breakdown will be for the last, oh goodness, my math escapes me again. What the this club
34
has left.
Games left?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they've got games in hand on everybody, right? So that's why Nashville is caught up. But to your point, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck is going to get the lion's share, but they will not be. There's no reluctance to put Laurent Brossoit in, and maybe we'll see him a little bit more than normal. We're certainly going to see a split, I would think, this week with the back to backs. There's no reason to rush or to push 37 back to back, but. And I don't even know who starts against Philadelphia, guys. We probably won't know that until Monday morning. So it could very well be Laurent Brossoit, but it could be Connor Hellebuyck that goes in. So, but there's, you know, they've got two great choices there.
Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press, joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Winnipeg Jets as they sit here at the NHL's All-Star break. Jason, what's your priority if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff in terms of trade deadline acquisition?
You know, we have these conversations all the time about, oh, they need a better center iceman to get Patrick Laine the puck and whatnot. But, you know, I've been a fairly big proponent of Brian Little this season. I thought he's done, you know, pretty much everything they've kind of asked of him and more. I mean, is he the hugely offensive middle guy that maybe they would like? Well, no, but... Boy, he does a whole lot of things on the ice that are positives. And if you do go out and get a second-line center, where does that put Brian Little? Does that make him a fourth-line center and really bolster that fourth line? I guess that's not a bad thing. I don't know if that's necessarily my priority for this team. I think they could probably use another top-line winger, and I think that they're, again, I mentioned before, I mean, if you're looking for... you know, a bigger presence on the second defensive unit to play along Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, if you could get a guy that would play that left side, you know, a real star guy, then you really, really bolstered your top six there, because obviously Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey are a pretty solid pairing. I really liked what Dmitry Kulikov has accomplished, you know, certainly in the last month, and there's no question that Tyler Myers is a much improved player from probably the mid-November on. So if you can bolster that second-line pairing, that's probably not a bad thing. But, I, you know, there's a lot to be said for going out and, you know, really, really stocking up and maybe getting a center and a winger and really going for it this year. You know, we talk about these windows of opportunity, and there is sort of a mindset out there that the window is open for a year or two or three or four. And I guess in a sense that's true, but this club could look so different next year, guys. You know, with the Jacob Trouba situation still hanging there, with Tyler Myers being an unrestricted free agent and the Jets, you know, having to make some decisions about maybe a young forward, you know, how many of these guys can they pay? And, you know, Laurent Brossoit, I mean, you know he's going to be asking for a lot more money than being paid now. So I guess my only, you know, I'll just leave you with the fact that I think if Kevin Cheveldayoff may just want to really go for it this year.
Jay, last night was obviously the skills competition in San Jose, and tonight is the 2019 NHL All-Star Game, and we've got Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and Paul Maurice, obviously, behind the bench. And even though a lot of people don't put stock into the All-Star Game, is this just going to be nice for Jets fans to watch Scheifele and Wheeler and Maurice on the big stage with, you know, some of the other great stars like Steven Stamkos and Connor McDavid, and, you know, the list goes on and on?
Well, sure. I mean, I think for fans, they love to see their guys, you know, shoulder to shoulder with some of the very best, and just to see how they compete. Of course, this doesn't tell us anything really. If Mark Scheifele gets 4 goals and 1 assist tonight, or if he gets 0 and 0, it really doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. But you're right. I mean, there's always a bit that there's a fan in you that wants to see your guys, the guys you cheer for, along with, you know, playing along with the very best. I mean, I think I'm a lot older than you guys, but watching '87 Canada Cup when Dale Hawerchuk was there, that was pretty special for this city. Not just because Canada was winning, but because Dale Hawerchuk was playing such a big role. So I mean, there's always a little bit of that. But it's a nice carrot for those guys. They get to go there, and it's nice for Paul Maurice. He's been funny because he said that. I mean, what kind of coaching are you really going to do with these guys? Just, you know, just go out and try and, you know, just let them play. So, but it's nice for him too. It shows that he's done a great job with the Jets, and they're running high in the Central Division. So that's going to be a good day. I'm not an All-Star guy. I will watch it with in fact, we'll be on planes today, but we're going to try and see some of it, or when we arrive in Philadelphia. But it's always a good day. More than anything, though, it's just a break for some of those guys who just really need some time off before that great rush through February and March to the playoffs.
You know, Jason, I'm old enough to know that Dale Hawerchuk didn't get an assist on that goal, by the way, and he should have.
Yeah, I feel like there should be. We've actually analyzed the tape. It's like the Zapruder film. We've looked at it from all angles, and there's no question he was robbed of a very critical assist. But and I've asked Dale about that, and he laughs about it. I don't know if that burns with him more than it does with Jet fans, quite frankly.
Yeah, but Jay, he also didn't get a penalty on the hook, so he's probably it probably evened out.
Yeah, it was a different era, though. You could do that back then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Jay, I've always been a big proponent of allowing guys to develop in the AHL. And, you know, Sammy Niku's a 22-year-old defenseman who, you know, has just some wonderful talents. But do you think that the Jets are better served allowing him to continue his development path in the AHL with the Moose? Or do you see him playing in that, you know, seventh defenseman with the Jets?
Yeah, if he's not on the ice, I don't see any benefit to him being up with the Winnipeg Jets at this point. I mean, he wowed everybody with his first season in North America last year, but that's just one season, and he is a youngster. I mean, you know, he's only 21 years old, and why have him as a seventh defenseman up in the box? I mean, if everybody is healthy, he's not in my top six right now, and I don't know if he's in Paul Maurice's top six. So let him play with the Moose. We know that. I mean, I think people realize that this kid's going to be part of the organization for a very long time, and he's done. He had a terrific game in Nashville, a real coming out party, I thought, much more so than just scoring a goofy goal in Montreal last year. I mean, he was a force the other night in Nashville in what is an incredibly difficult building to play in. That said, I don't think there's any problem with him going back to the Moose this year, being there, you know, when absolutely necessary. But he doesn't play in my top six right now, and somebody else is my seventh defenseman at this point.
Jason,
and again, if the Jets are going to make an acquisition, then it even, you know, pushes his, you know, the need for him to play even down a bit. So.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. You can read his coverage of the Jets' road trip through Philadelphia and Boston at winnipegfreepress.com and in the hard copy edition of the paper. Jason, travel safe. Thanks for joining us this morning.
That was kind of you for the plug, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, we preview the Jets' contests in Philly and Boston. Much more to come, including your calls in hour number 3. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
On for Appleton. He'll one-hand it into the Flyer zone, and this one comes to an end. The shots on goal will finish 35-35, but the Jets found a way to get 7 past Neubert and Stolarz, and Flyers could only manage 1 past Connor Hellebuck.
That was earlier this season from the first meeting between the Jets and the Philadelphia Flyers. The Jets with a 7-1 victory over the Civ-like goaltending provided by Michael Neuwirth and Anthony Stolarz.
That's Mr. Civ to you.
Mr. Civ, pardon me. I wouldn't expect to see either of them in net. Probably Carter Hart back in net for the Philadelphia Flyers. He's been their, he's their, you know, up-and-coming goaltender, and he's played well for the Flyers as of late, so I'd expect to see Carter Hart in net for the against the Jets.
It would be Hart or Mike McKenna.
Or, you know, so
the well-traveled Mike McKenna.
The well-traveled Mike McKenna, indeed. That's Monday, of course, the Jets and the Flyers. And then it's a it's a back-to-back situation for the Jets, as then they head to Boston on Tuesday to meet the Bruins, where they Bruins might be without their goaltender, Tuukka Rask, because he's been out of the lineup with a concussion. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just before 10 in the morning on Saturday morning, this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. A lot of travel for Scheifele and Wheeler. They're going to have to travel all the way from the West Coast to the East Coast after playing in the All-Star game later on tonight, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. But the Jets have to be looking to get back on the winning ways, especially on Monday night in Philadelphia against a Flyers team that is, well, really not a very good hockey team, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, and, you know, we should mention Anthony Stolarz hasn't played since December, and I believe Carter Hart is still with Lehigh Valley in the American Hockey League.
Because, they sent him down during the break,
right,
yes.
And we'll ask our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo coming up next segment, because Carter Hart can obviously be recalled after the All-Star break, and... Was it Michael Neuwirth that got the last start?
Yes, Neuwirth got the last start and was pulled very quickly. And then Stolarz came in, and he didn't fare much better. It was a dominating win by the Jets over the Flyers back. It was a Sunday afternoon game, I believe, if I recall correctly.
Right. So right now, I mean, it's unbelievable. You mentioned Carter Hart has actually put up really good numbers in the NHL, better numbers than in the American Hockey League, Dave, right? So, I mean, right now, Brian Elliott's still out of the lineup. Michael Neuwirth is coming back at some point. Mm-hmm. Mike McKenna has been on, I think, four different teams this year. The Flyers have used, I think, seven goalies now, right? Yeah. So just incredible. I mean, I don't know if that's a record, but it's got to be close to a record. So, yeah, the Flyers are out of a playoff spot, Drew, unless they do something completely miraculous, like win 15 games in a row or something like that, which they won 10 in a row last year.
And missed the playoffs.
And they missed the playoffs, but... I don't see that happening. I mean, you've got too many teams you got to leapfrog, right, Dave? You got to leapfrog Florida. You got to leapfrog Carolina. So
they're still behind Detroit.
You're behind Detroit. So the Flyers are in the basement right now of the Eastern Conference standings, and it's all about next year. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, Drew, on the NHL This Week show. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, this Flyers team, you know, Wayne Simmonds is a guy that stands out to you as a pending UFA. But, Dave, when I look at the future of this team, I don't think that this is a reloading situation or a rebuilding situation. You're really solid at the top with Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek and Sean Couturier. I mean, you've got an up-and-coming star, Winnipeg's Nolan Patrick, even though, you know, he's been inconsistent this year. But, you know, you've got other good young players like Travis Konechny, really solid defensemen, Goss Despair, Provorov, Travis Sanheim. I mean, goaltending is a big issue. It seems to always be an issue in Philadelphia, but Carter Hart is the future in net of this team. So I look at this situation and I say, okay, you get rid of, you don't get rid of, but you trade Wayne Simmonds and, you know, maybe you move one or two other minor pieces. I don't think you're going to move any of the big boys like Giroux or Couturier, but I look at this team and I think if they make the right moves in the offseason, this team is going to be fine next year. I really do think that, because you look at their roster, and you mentioned, Drew, they missed the playoffs, but what did they miss the playoffs by? 2 points? I mean, they didn't miss the playoffs by much, and there's still a lot of skill on this team. And they're going to have the cap room.
They certainly will have the cap room, and they do have some players. It's, for whatever reason, I mean, it's obviously been a disaster of a season in Philadelphia. No one expected them to be this poor as they've been. It's all about the goaltending, of course. Is Carter Hart going to be ready to step in next season? Right now,
That's a big ask for a first-year pro. I think that's probably too big for him.
And most people are expecting the Flyers to be active in the goaltender market ahead of next season to really bridge that gap until Carter Hart's ready.
And also, let's not forget, there's a guy named Coach Q who may or may not be in the future of the Philadelphia Flyers, who, you know, I mean, if he may also be in the future of the Edmonton Oilers, probably a few teams that are looking for him to give them a boost. And look what Barry Trotz was able to do in New York.
Island.
So, yeah. I mean, from my perspective, if you can get a coach of Joel Quenneville's talent, then I think that really bolsters that team because, as he just listed, this is a team that still has some pretty good pieces on it and, you know, has some. We've talked about their prospect system. It seems like it's okay. So you've got some good pieces right now. You could bolster it by trading away some of your UFA players and, you know, really kind of load up a little bit, do a little bit of a reload maybe at the draft, and that really will set your roster for the next couple of years. So, yeah, I agree. This isn't a team that needs to rebuild. I think it's a team that, you know, really just needed some solid goaltending. Again, though, I'm of the mind that you allow a goaltender to develop properly in the AHL versus throwing him into the NHL right away. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying that he couldn't do it. I'm just saying it's not very often where you see a young goaltender in his first year come right out and start playing in the NHL and stay there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You need to have a veteran goalie there. Similar, I think, to Steve Mason being there for Connor Hellebuyck last year, Drew.
Didn't work out for Mason, but yeah, you're
sure,
right. The idea was there.
You have to have that safety net. Mm-hmm. But, you know, guys, let's just quickly go over the Flyers, you know, lineup here, because I really don't think this team is as bad as the record indicates. Top six forwards. You got JVR, Claude Giroux, Travis Konecny. Obviously, Jacob Voracek at times is on that top line. Second line is Oscar Lindblom, Sean Couturier, and Voracek. Third line, Scott Laughton, Nolan Patrick, Wayne Simmonds. Fourth line is Yori Laterra, Phil Verone, Michael Raffle. Your top six defense here, Provorov, Sanheim, Goss Despair, Andrew McDonald. McDonald's having a horrible year. But Robert Haug and Radko Gudas. I mean, that's not a bad lineup.
Well, except for the fact that they're 27th overall in the NHL and they can't score goals, I would agree with you.
Well, no, but I mean the point is you look at, you know, their top nine forwards and Wayne Simmonds is going to be traded, but you know you got Nolan Patrick there. I mean he's your third line center. Obviously, you know you have hopes that he's going to be more than a third line center, but you've got a lot of talent there.
On paper, you do.
Up the middle, Giroux, Couturier, and Nolan Patrick.
On paper, they should be better than where they are, which is part
That's
of the
what I'm
reason.
Saying.
Oh, it's part of the reason.
You can't tell me the Islanders. You can't tell me, Drew, if the Flyers had solid goaltending all year, they would be that far behind the Islanders.
Well, the Islanders are. I mean, I think it's a combination of solid goaltending, which the Islanders are getting, and better coaching, which obviously Barry Trotz is providing.
Yep.
I mean, the Flyers have been in disarray from the start of the season.
You know, in Dave Haxtell's defense. What happened when they fired Dave Haxtell? They got worse.
Yeah, well,
so I don't think you can necessarily blame Haxtell.
Oh, hang on. Is there something in the water in Philadelphia? Like there's something in the water in Edmonton?
That's funny, by the way. Did you see the water company came out and said the water's just fine in Edmonton?
I did see that. That was a good line.
I think they desperately need an upgrade in their top four defense, and they need to bring in a veteran goalie.
Yeah, I think if they do those two things, I agree with Ezzy. I think that they'll be fine. Well, I don't think that they're challenging for the Stanley Cup next year, but I think that you're at least fighting for that playoff spot.
The trajectory would be upwards. The Jets and the Flyers Monday night in Philadelphia, and then the Jets head down the road to play Boston on Tuesday night. Both games, of course, available here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo joins us to preview more on the Jets-Flyers contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm relaxed. I'm refreshed. I've had a week off. You know, the bye came at the perfect time for the Flyers, so it leads right into the All-Star break. It's a nice, like, lengthy break for me before they start playing, like, every other day for the next month and a half.
That's right. So the Jets and the Flyers in the same boat, having both had the bye week leading into the All-Star break. Anthony, it's obviously a lost year in Philadelphia. I don't think I'm telling any secrets when I say that. You know,
You know, for this next month, leading up until the trade deadline, is that sort of what the focus is for people covering the Flyers? Is, you know, what's going to change leading up until the trade deadline, and then sort of the rest of the year can be spent on maybe development or playing out the string?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this next month is really going to be interesting in the sense that, you know, we're just waiting for the shoes to drop, right? I mean, GM Chuck Fletcher they've already announced that he's going to have a media availability on Monday before the game against the Jets. And this would be really the first time that he's talked in quite some time. And I'm sure he's going to get a barrage of questions about, you know, what's coming up trade-wise. So I think that this is where it's going to get interesting as far as who stays and who goes, who's part of the future of the Flyers franchise that's currently on the team and who is not. So that's really where it gets interesting leading up to the deadline. And then, yes, I think exactly after the deadline, and maybe even starting a little bit before, it depends on when he starts making moves, you might start seeing some guys who really get a shot at the NHL level, who've been, you know, developing in the AHL, been waiting their turn to get a little bit more of a longer look with some extended minutes in key roles. And so, you know, it's kind of important to figure this out. And I'll flash you guys back. You know, the worst season in Flyers history was back in 2007. They were terrible, you know, record-wise. But they had some good players on the team, and it was like, well, you know, if we just make a couple of moves, a couple of changes, we can get this team back to being a contender pretty quick. And they did. They made some trades at the deadline. They added a couple free agents in the summer. And then the next season, they were in the Eastern Conference Final before losing to Pittsburgh. I think that this team's similar in that vein. And I think, not to say that I think that this team could be an Eastern Conference finalist next year, but I do think that there's enough talent here that if Chuck Fletcher does things the right way over the course of the next, you know, 4 or 5 months, that this team could well be back in playoff contention as soon as next season.
You know, Anthony, I want to expand on that last thought there. And by the way, I apologize for not being on the show last December. I was on a family vacation. If I would have known you were coming on, I probably would have not gone on the vacation. Just kidding.
You remembered my complaint, and I appreciate that, Ezra. It's what makes you the consummate professional.
Yeah. I appreciate that. No, but
savant would have been a word you could have used there as well.
Idiot savant.
Yeah.
Anthony, when you're talking about this Flyers team, I agree with you 100%. And last segment, we were talking about the Flyers, obviously, because the Jets play the Flyers this coming Monday. But, you know, you look at them at the bottom of the standings, 44 points. Even though they've won 3 games in a row, they're right towards the bottom with Ottawa and New Jersey. But as you mentioned, I mean, this isn't a rebuild situation. And I mentioned up the middle, Claude Giroux, Sean Couturier, Nolan Patrick. You've got JVR there, first year of a 5-year deal. Travis Konecny is a good young player. Obviously, we got to throw in Jake Voracek, who's still a great power forward. And you look at the defense, and you've got good young defensemen like Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostisbehere, Travis Sanheim from Manitoba. I mean, when you look at this roster, obviously you could say that it's underperforming, but doesn't that just show you that what this team really needs is one or two pieces, especially in goal, and then an upgrade, you know, in the coaching department or, you know, scouting department, and then this team's going to be right back on track?
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs a little bit more than just that. I mean, I think those things are legitimate needs, but I think that you look at, you know, I think goaltending is, you're starting to see Carter Hart, the top prospect in the organization, has been playing and playing pretty decently since he's been in the league. I think he's played 11 games now, and he's, you know, he's not overwhelmed at 20 years old. Now, you can't expect him to be a savior this season and next season right away at 20, 21 years old, but he can at least be better than what they've had. So that's certainly an upgrade in and of itself. And you mentioned, you know, yes, there's a lot of center depth. There's good young defensemen. I think that it's missing scoring depth on the wings, though. I think that beyond your top line and then, like, partial second line, you don't have much else with this organization. And I think that's where the team needs to find replacements more than anything else. And they would benefit from a veteran defenseman. I mean, when Radko Gudas is your best defenseman this year, and he has been their best defenseman this year, that tells you a lot about where things are. I mean, yes, Ivan Provorov's had a down year, but I'm not worried about him. I think he's going to be just fine. Travis Sanheim's been a little inconsistent, but again, I don't worry about him because you've seen the progression and you've seen what, you know, what he can do when he's playing at the top of his game. Shane Gostisbehere, I've never been a huge fan of as far as the way he plays. He's very gifted offensively, but if his offensive game's not there, you see the weakness in his game. He's not a very good defensive defenseman. In a lot of ways, he reminds me a lot of Mike Green, if you remember Mike Green, when he was in his heyday with the Caps, where he could score a ton, but boy, you can pick on him in the defensive zone. So I think that he might actually be a guy, if you're looking for like a surprise name who could get moved here in the next month or so, or even if you head into the off season, I think that he's one that Chuck Fletcher might look at and say, yeah, he has some value and maybe we can get something in return for Shane Gostisbehere. But yeah, I think that you're spot on. Otherwise, I think it's, you know, they are that close to turning it back around and getting, you know, get going. Plus the fact that, you know, you're going to likely get a top pick in the next year's draft. If you continue to be toward the bottom of the standings, obviously you don't know where you're going to pick, but it's a good draft, pretty top heavy. And if you get lucky enough to get one of those top two picks and you end up with, you know, Hughes or Kako, then you're talking about getting a player who can come in right away and contribute at the NHL level. So I think that there's a lot to like about what the Flyers have coming and where they're positioned for the future, but it certainly needs to be addressed by Chuck Fletcher and needs to be addressed pretty, you know, well over the course of the next 4 or 5 months.
You know, Anthony, you touched on it a little bit with your answer to Ez, but Carter Hart, obviously, in his first year pro, it's not ideal for him to be developing at the NHL level generally. And so what would be your vision, or what's the organization's vision with Carter Hart? Do they want him spending a few more seasons in the AHL, or do you actually see this as a legitimate legitimately staying with the Flyers?
Yeah, so I think he's going to stay with the Flyers for this year for sure. I think that that's something that, you know, it's a lot, like you guys said, it's a lost season, so why not, right? Why not? He's already played 11 games, and he's not been overwhelmed. He doesn't look terrible. Why not give it a shot? And, yeah, he's going to make mistakes, and, yeah, he might not have a great game here or there, but at least he figures out the NHL, you know, in a low-stress, low-pressure situation, whereas that really wasn't the opportunity for him earlier in the season when the team actually thought they were still competitive for this year. Moving forward, I think it's imperative to really bring in a reliable veteran second goaltender. And that's not a knock on Brian Elliott, because Brian Elliott's done well here, but he's, you know, the injuries are killing the guy, and you know, he's getting older now, and I'm not certain that that he's a guy that you would want to bring back to be that second guy. So I really think that they really need to find that somewhere in the either here at the trade deadline or in the offseason, and bring in a guy who can, you know, spell Hart if he's struggling, and not put the team, you know, in dire straits. Because, I mean, you know, we had Calvin Pickard earlier this season. He was not very good. I mean, they brought in Mike McKenna, who's played a game, and, you know, he's told me on my podcast that he's the biggest suitcase in the NHL. You know, he traveled and played for 21 different 21 different teams in his career, in 14-year career. You know, these are guys, Michael Neuwehr, who's completely stealing money in the NHL because he's constantly hurt whenever he has a bad game. You know, these are guys you can't really rely on. So that's why they need to find that veteran guy. So I think if you bring in a guy who Hart can pretty much split time with, maybe Hart plays a little bit more than 50% and the other guy plays, you know, if they do like a 60-40 split, I think that's kind of what he needs for years, for his 21-year-old year, 22-year-old year, and then he can kind of take it and run with it.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com.
Anthony, you just mentioned Mike McKenna, and, you know, talking about Carter Hart, and, you know, you mentioned that on your Snow the Goalie podcast, you talked to Mike McKenna. Is the expectation that after the All-Star break in that game against the Jets on Monday, it'll be Mike McKenna, or is there a chance we see Carter Hart? And then, you know, taking the conversation further, Michael Neuwirth and Brian Elliott, they're going to return eventually. So does that mean that, you know, when that happens, Carter Hart's going to go back down to the AHL?
So right now, Carter is in the AHL this weekend, and he's down there playing just to get action, right? I think Carter comes back tomorrow, I guess the big question is, do the Flyers keep McKenna in the organization, or do they, because Anthony Stolarz actually came off of his rehab stint down in the AHL, and now he's actually back with the on the Flyers roster. Do they keep it, you know, Hart and Stolarz? Do they carry three goalies? And that's going to be an interesting thing. I think Hart stays. I really do. I don't think that you're going to see it be Stolarz and McKenna. And I think McKenna was just a guy that they brought in to kind of stem the tide. I know that they do love him as a personality. I mean, who doesn't, right? The guy's great as far as you know, in the locker room and a great teammate and a great guy. But I'm not certain that there is a real spot for him in this organization. Especially it's very going to be very crowded pretty soon. So I would venture to guess, and this is a pure guess. I don't have any intel here, but I would venture to guess that McKenna gets waived. If he goes unclaimed, the Flyers will send him to the Phantoms in the AHL, and you'll see Hart and Stolarz until another goalie might be ready, whenever that might be.
And the way McKenna's season has gone, he might be claimed by some team in Norway or something, given the air miles he's racking up. Anthony, final question for you. Nolan Patrick, as you mentioned him earlier, talking about, you know, go up the middle with Giroux and Couturier and Patrick. And Patrick, of course, is still young, only in his second season in the NHL after being drafted second overall. Are you seeing progression in his game from year one to year two?
Well, we hadn't until recently. It was really a cause for concern. Like, he was really struggling for much of the season. And then it was funny, you know, I also had on the podcast, I had Dale Weiss on, actually the day before the Flyers waived him.
Yeah, the kiss of death, you know.
Yeah, I know. We are the kiss of death. And he was talking about Nolan. And, you know, he's bonded with Nolan, obviously, both guys from Winnipeg. And you know, they've become really, really good friends in that locker room. And Dale was saying, you know, for Nolan, it's all a matter of confidence and understanding what it takes to be a professional athlete, not just on the ice, but off the ice. He says, you know, a lot of times you don't realize, you know, this is the human side of things. Like, he's 20 years old and he's living on his own for the first time, and he's got a little bit of money, and he's got to buy an apartment and get some furniture and things like that you never would have done before. And he says a lot of times that could have an adverse effect on a guy. And he says, so it's a lot about finding the confidence to not only be a player on the ice, but to also be a pro athlete off of the ice. And he felt that, like, Nolan was starting to figure that out, and he was starting to get better. And then, lo and behold, the very next game, Nolan Patrick comes out and scores two goals. The very next game after that in Montreal, Nolan Patrick comes out and scores two goals. And now all of a sudden you're saying, wow, look, you're seeing that progression again. He's starting to figure it out. Maybe Dale was onto something there, that Nolan is, you know, getting ready to break out and be that guy that everybody kind of anticipated he would be when he was taken second overall. So up until last week or a week and a half ago, Nolan Patrick was considered a disappointment. And I know it's only a couple of games, and you can't just hinge an entire season on a couple of games, but maybe you're starting to see, and they were starting to see it in the locker room, but maybe we're now finally starting to see on the ice where Nolan Patrick is headed. And if he's going to live up to those expectations, then the Flyers will be very happy.
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philly Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. He's one of our favorites. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us this morning, buddy.
Hey, guys, anytime. You know it.
Take care, Anthony.
Cheers, Anthony.
When we come back, we discuss the Professional Hockey Writers Association midseason awards. Did they get it right? Are they a bunch of buffoons? Could it be both? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oilers, this is the scary part. The Oilers are the best team in the National Hockey League when Connor McDavid is on the ice statistically, and they're the worst when he's off of it. So you speak to value, most valuable player, the best player in the league. He's 19 points ahead of where he was last year at this very same time at the All-Star break, 73 points. I know he's not leading the league, but to speak to what he means to that team, it's so clear.
It's our boy.
TSN senior hockey writer.
Frankie.
Frank Saravelli. Talking about why he voted Connor McDavid as the Hart Trophy winner on the midseason PHWA award ballots, which were released at the All-Star break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We talk about those voting at the mid-season mark. We're now on the program, and this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985 for freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door. Visit shopbernsteins.com. If you're at the Cordon Community Center Winter Carnival this weekend, you can be sure to check out Bernstein's Deli. They're going to be on site, of course, supporting the community. That's what Bernstein's Deli does. I had a lovely dinner last night with my family at Bernstein's Deli. So, you know, they're all over the place as they go.
Yeah, and, you know, just to expand on that, I got a message from our good friend Aaron. He's saying that they're going to be serving burgers, dogs, pierogies. They've got soup, chili, all that good stuff. They're going to be at River Heights today from 11 to 2. And then they're also going to be at Crescentwood Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 2. So, I mean, what's better than that? You get a little Bernstein's Deli coming off of the outdoor rink.
Yeah, and if you need to get your kids to burn off some energy, Winterfest at Cordon Community Center, all three locations, that would be a strong endorsement from us because you can eat some Bernstein's Deli while you're at it. So the PHW...
I used to work at the River Heights Canteen, by the way.
I didn't know that.
I was fired, though.
That was inevitable.
This is a true story.
Uh-huh.
I'm, of course, a proud alumnus of Kelvin High School.
Uh-huh.
And when I was
this is going to be great.
When I was 15 years old,
uh-huh,
I worked at the canteen. It was a part-time job,
yes,
obviously, because you know my studies were
uh-huh
and my flourishing
hockey career.
I'll tell
you what, your studies when you were 15 years old are not things we can bring up on air. Let me tell you that's for sure.
I was studying the menu at McDonald's.
Yeah.
So I was a worker at the, I don't know what you would call it, a canteen attendant.
An employee? How about an employee?
A worker bee.
And I was let go because Kelvin used to play their hockey games there, and I used to let people come in and just take whatever they wanted.
So
they didn't like that. I used to give candy away.
Yeah, I can't believe you would get fired for that.
Yeah,
I mean,
that.
You know, basically,
it wasn't stealing, it was sharing.
Well, that's actually the definition of stealing.
Yeah, basically a complete dereliction of your duties cost you your job.
But more importantly... How much did you eat?
That's the real question. Oh, is how much of that stuff did you eat yourself there, Chuckles?
The amount of...
Vess is like, as he's blaming it on... He's like, yeah, all these people came in and they ate the candy. It's like, you just see him covered in like
powdered sugar.
And, like...
Remember they had that great French fry machine at River Heights?
I do remember they had that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that thing certainly wouldn't meet... Yeah. I don't think that thing would pass health codes nowadays.
I ate a lot of sour soothers.
I was
going to
say,
I
can just picture you like passed out in a sugar high, just buckets of sour soothers spread around you. No wonder you got fired from that job.
I like salty and sweet, though. A lot of popcorn.
You like anything, basically, is what we boiled it down to.
We've seen you eat popcorn in the press box. We know you like popcorn.
That's why I'm still shocked that he ate an apple in the first hour of today's show. Like, where did that come from? Who is that guy?
He offset it by eating Timbits.
That's true. Anyways, let's talk about the PHWA award winners.
Stands for Professional Hockey Writers Association.
That's true. It does. You heard from Frank Zaravelli there off the top talking that Connor McDavid got his vote as MVP. Unfortunately, not enough people voted like Frank Zaravelli. Nikita Kucherov ends up being the mid-season award winner for the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, that's my pick. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, these awards, it doesn't mean a lot at this point. It's fun for us to talk about
on sports radio.
It
gives us a good segment.
Right,
I appreciate it.
You know, I think there has to be a distinction, again, between best player and most valuable to a team. And I still think Sidney Crosby, and I've said this many times to you guys, I still think Crosby is the best all-around player in the league. And I think if there's one player I want on my team to win a Stanley Cup, right now it's Sidney Crosby. Is Connor McDavid the best offensive player? Yes, he is. He is, and he's also the fastest. But when you're talking about the most valuable player, it's got to be Nikita Kucherov, guys. Just look at his numbers. The point totals, the goals, the assists that he's putting up right now, it's really incredible. Johnny Gaudreau, I have no problem with that. And, you know, Connor McDavid finishes third. Obviously, you know, I still think Mark Scheifele deserves strong consideration, guys, for the Hart Trophy. And we might be a little bit biased here, but what Scheifele has done with the overtime winners and all that, he's been such a consistent player all year long. But again, I mean, how can you argue with Kucherov and Johnny Hockey?
Dave, do you think that McDavid should be higher than third? I mean, as he articulated his argument there, you heard from Frank Zaravelli say when he's on the ice, the Oilers the Oilers have the best team in hockey when he's on the ice, or the best line in hockey. But when he's off the ice, they have the worst team in hockey. Does that make him the most valuable player? Almost by definition, it sort of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, isn't that the very definition of the most valuable player? That if your team is unable to really get much done without you, then really, what are you? What is the rest of your, you know, what is, how are you not the very definition of the most valuable player? So to me, I mean, Connor McDavid, we talk about it, he's the best player in the game. I mean, he's just unbelievable what he's able to do.
But is he the best offensive player, or is he the best all-around player?
No, he's the best offensive player.
Is Nikita Kucherov that much better on the other aspects of the game than Connor McDavid is?
He's a responsible defensive forward. Kucherov, if you look at his takeaways, I mean, Kucherov is all over the ice. He's a responsible player. I mean, he's not a one-trick pony. But the point, I think, is, are you saying, again, I mean, this is so subjective, but when you're talking about valuable player, then the argument becomes, you know, well, are they going to be a playoff team? Which I think is ludicrous. Because I think if you have five Connor McDavids, the Oilers don't make the playoffs. Actually, maybe not.
But I was like,
five might be enough.
Yeah, that probably might be enough. But if you had two Connor McDavids, they probably don't get into the playoffs. But the point is, you take a guy off the ice, who is the most valuable to the team? And last year it was Taylor Hall and Nathan MacKinnon and Andrei Kopitar, not Connor McDavid.
Moving on to the Norris Trophy, the three names that were nominated by the PHWA was Mark Giordano, Morgan Riley, and Brent Burns in that order, 1, 2, 3. Did they get that one right with Giordano with the Calgary Flames so far this season?
Yep, that would be my pick. And, you know, Brent Burns is quietly taking over the scoring lead amongst defensemen. The only guy I would probably put in there as an honorable mention, and I mentioned this when we did our awards, is Chris Letang. I don't think Chris Letang is being talked about enough as far as the year he's having for the Penguins. He's been phenomenal. So, you know, Giordano, he might win his first ever Norris Trophy, but, you know, it's not going to be easy because this is not you wouldn't call this a runaway lead for Giordano,
yeah,
right? It's not like previous years. Another guy, Drew, that you have to consider as a dark horse in the second half is Carlson.
Eric Carlson. He's obviously started slow with San Jose, but he's been on fire since sort of December. Since then, he's been absolutely incredible. Dave, any discussion, any disagreement?
No, I would agree with Ezzy's assessment. I think Giordano's been phenomenal. I think Calgary's been, you know, a surprise to a lot of people. I still think that they don't get a lot of respect around the NHL despite what they're able to do. But from my perspective, I think he's been phenomenal.
For the Calder Trophy, Elias Pettersson is certainly running away with it in terms of points, and he was the overwhelming award winner for Rookie of the Year. Could you make an argument for Rasmus Dahlin or Miro Heiskanen, or is it Pettersson right now because he's basically the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, Rasmus Dahlin has been great for Buffalo, and you know we talked about it a couple of weeks back. Miro Heiskanen is leading all rookies in ice time, and Rasmus Dahlin is second. The other guy I would throw in there, yes, Elias Pettersson's winning the Calder Trophy. I was talking to Dave about this off-air before the show. As long as Pettersson stays healthy, he's going to win it. Similar to Matt Barzal last year, I think he's head and shoulders above the rest. The dark horse for me, Drew, is Brady Tkachuk. And I realize that Ottawa's having a horrible year, but Brady Tkachuk is having a nice season. I think he's up to 12 goals now or 11 goals on the season.
11 goals, 12 assists for 23
points.
There
you go. And he missed some time earlier. So, I mean, Brady Tkachuk is having a great year at 19 years old. That's not easy to do to put up those goal totals. He's probably going to hit 20 goals this year. So, for me, Tkachuk would probably be fourth on that list. But it's really tough to argue with what Pettersson's done in Van City.
Last one, the Vezina Trophy. So far, the PHWA, the Professional Hockey Writers Association, has awarded that to John Gibson of the Anaheim Ducks, with Marc-Andre Fleury second and Frederik Andersen third. Gibson, Dave, I mean, we know how good he's been for the Anaheim Ducks, but is that a case of sort of like McDavid and the Hart Trophy last year? Can a goalie whose team doesn't make the playoffs still win the Vezina Trophy? That was sort of the knock on McDavid last year for why he didn't win the Hart Trophy, because they didn't make the playoffs in Edmonton.
Yeah, I absolutely think he could. And when we did this, going back to our picks, I had Gibson as my Vezina based on the way he had been playing for Anaheim. And I think, you know, anybody who looks at that Ducks team and sees them nibbling at the playoffs, only 1 point back of Colorado for the second wild card spot, but yet, you know, a minus 33 goal differential right now. They don't score a tremendous amount of goals. I think they're last maybe in the Western Conference second last behind, just one ahead of LA in terms of positioning, in terms of goals for. But so this isn't a team that's giving him a tremendous amount of goal scoring, and yet he's still winning games. He's still playing the way he was. So to me, Gibson has been just phenomenal, and he would continue to be my Vezina choice.
Yeah, Dave, I don't think that there's any doubt that Marc-Andre Fleury and John Gibson are the front runners right now. I'm going to throw out two guys that I think are going going to be in the conversation as the season progresses if they're not already. David Riddick, if you look at his numbers, he's 19-4-4. He's got a 920 save percentage. Sorry, 918 save percentage. He's been phenomenal. He's only started 27 games. So David Riddick, to me, has to be in the conversation. And where would Montreal be without Carey Price? Carey Price already has 3 shutouts. He's already got 20 wins. So for me, Carey Price has to be a Vezina candidate too.
I'll tell you both that I think you're overlooking in this player, Robin Leonard.
I would throw Leonard. That's what I'm saying. I don't think this is a landslide for John Gibson or Marc-Andre Fleury. They might not even be finalists by the time the season ends.
Robin Leonard, 931 save percentage. That's atop the NHL. 2.02 goals against average. That's also atop the NHL. Where would the Islanders be without Robin Leonard right now?
Price and Leonard, goaltending.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Boston Bruins. The Jets are into Boston on Tuesday night. We're going to be joined by Ty Anderson, who covers the Bruins for 98.5thesportshub.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.